Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Slash Filmcast After Dark, the after show where we talk about a variety of random topics that are of no importance to anyone. That said, we are extremely grateful to all of our patrons at patreon.com/filmpodcast. That's patreon.com/filmpodcast, or the phrase film podcast, I should say. Thanks to all of you for supporting the Slash Filmcast After Dark. And starting in 2021, it will be the only way to get these episodes is by going to patreon.com/filmpodcast. So, again, thanks.
And, thank you.
Do check that out. Okay, so today's topic, which we got a request for from a few people, is the new generation of video game consoles. Specifically, Microsoft and Sony have released new video game consoles in the last week. The Xbox Series S and Series X from Microsoft and the PlayStation 5 from Sony.
Big freaking deals, yeah.
Yeah, and we have some amount of expertise in this podcast to be able to talk about this. Jeff has been reviewing and discussing video games professionally for about a decade. Devendra has been in tech for about that long. And I used to work at Xbox in the marketing department. And so got some friends there that I'm rooting for. That said, I only have a PlayStation 5 right now because, you know, the Xbox Series X is supply constrained, as they say. So I was not able to get one. I ordered one from Microsoft and it'll
some
be arriving.
Friends.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, I know. When you need a extremely valuable piece of hardware like the Xbox Series X, they're nowhere to be found.
It's okay. They were probably waiting for a TV invite at some point too, and just didn't get it. Got nothing.
It's a callback nice. To Lovecraft Country. So, So I had a few thoughts to share, but it sounds like you both have both consoles, right, Devendra? I watched your reviews, but I didn't know if you still are like you get to keep them, Devendra, or did you buy them for yourself, like? You have both consoles, right?
I have them both right now. They have not taken them away from me. Eventually, they will go back to their companies and I'll have to get them. But yeah, I have both with me right now. I've spent a ton of time with them. I've written thousands of words, some of the longest reviews I've ever written and some of the longest videos I've ever, produced.
I watched those videos and they're very enjoyable. So I'd recommend you check out Devendra's video reviews. Jeff, did you get them given to you or did you have to buy them? Like, how did you even get them?
I purchased both of them. I purchased an Xbox Series X and a PlayStation 5. I have not had any experience with the Xbox Series S.
Yeah.
How did
it
you buy them?
It's very cute.
Yeah. How did you buy them? Like,
diligence and hard work, Dave. I actually bought my Xbox from the Microsoft store as well on the moment it launched. And I actually pre-ordered two PlayStation 5s, redundant. In fact, actually, at one point, I had three PlayStation 5s pre-ordered for redundancy because people were getting, messages from Amazon saying your pre-order has been canceled. And it was a mess. The day of the pre-order launches for both consoles was a real mess.
The video game industry, which theoretically is very tech-heavy, could not seem to make/sell enough product to satisfy demand, basically, right?
Apple is the only person that knows how to do this.
Yeah.
It was a weird time, and I had zero confidence until it actually showed up at my door that my PlayStation 5 pre-order was actually going to arrive.
Right? Yeah, like, me too. That's why I had two.
I pre-ordered on Amazon, and it was through like a weird page on Amazon. Like it was through like the, it wasn't like the main detail page with the buy box. It was like some other like direct link to the product. And I was just like, I don't usually use this when I'm adding stuff to my cart. And I added it and I was like, okay, well hopefully in like 2.5 months it actually shows up. And it did.
That's the special link that appears for, these crazy buys. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, By the way, I delivered my, or not delivered, he came and picked it up, but Anthony Carboni came and got my second PlayStation 5. He paid me for it, but it was it found a good home.
How much was the markup for Anthony?
Well, the real friend benefit was that I gave it to him at cost because this thing's worth its weight in gold right now.
Yeah, I mean, he has cost Anthony, your friendship with Anthony Carboni has cost you like $300 at this point.
Oh, mm-hmm. Dude, way more than that. Let's be honest. Yeah. It's
So, first of all, I just want to start by saying this. I have had the PlayStation 5 and I've been playing Miles Morales, Spider-Man Miles Morales on it. and it is an incredible experience. Like, it just, not only, I think it was Jeff Grubb that put it this way, but basically, like playing the next generation of consoles made him retroactively angry at the previous generation of consoles.
Yep. Right? I put that in my reviews because they screwed us. Yeah.
Because the last generation of consoles, right? PlayStation 4 and Xbox One came out
you're
at a very
like
weird...
the whole generation, including the mid-gen stuff. But yeah.
Right. Exactly right. And it came out at a very weird time because I think that this was like roughly around the time that like smartphones were taken off. But
it's like 2012, so like smartphones were entrenched, but
they were already a thing. But it's like it, you know, it was a huge deal at the time that like Xbox was like, okay, we got to own the living room, right? You got to have a Kinect, and you got to be able to interact with your voice. You got to have what do you call it? You have to be able to plug in your cable box into the Xbox, it's going to be like
the idea of it.
Device.
Right. It was called the Xbox One because it was supposed to be input one on your television.
Correct.
Right? Oh, like that's how antiquated the entire idea behind it is. Is like it's input one, and then you plug everything into this, and then this into your TV.
Right. And there was a whole. They actually spun up a whole studio. They're going to make a whole studio. They're going to make shows. Right. Yeah. Through the studio which is a plan that never actually ended up really happening. They made a couple things, but it didn't end up becoming
all of the functionality of the Kinect. Yes. But all of the functionality of you'll be able to be playing a game and watch television picture in picture that is be streamed through the box. All of that abandoned very, very fast. But that was the idea behind it, is that it was going to be this transmedia device where you play a video game and watch television and it all happens and you get achievements for watching TV shows. And there's all happening all at the same time in different windows on your screen. And none of it was.
And meanwhile, the gamers were like, I want to play games.
Yeah. It's pretty easy for me to change inputs, dude.
Yeah. But what a disaster. Yeah.
Well, the thing is like it was designed like the whole architecture, you know, was designed wanting to be everything to everyone. Mm-hmm. And as a result, you have what, like a 5,500 RPM hard drive in that thing, right? Like it's like, it kind of really limited what was really possible from a gaming perspective for an entire generation. And not just Xbox, we should point out. I mean, PlayStation 4 also had limitations as well.
Let me be absolutely clear here. Whatever the hell Microsoft was doing, just going back, because I covered some of the early Xbox One stuff too, it sounded so cool, but you look at it now, it's just like all marketing garbage, guys. You didn't have to put a Kinect in every single box. Sure, it was like vaguely successful in the 360, but that was your death knell, because you released a $500 box that was $100 more than the PlayStation 4, which was a more powerful gaming console. That's all it is.
I actually remember I vividly remember watching a Jeff Cannata YouTube video.
Yeah.
At the time where you had just been at E3, I think it was Jeff. Mm-hmm. And you had said at the end of the day, one of the consoles is $500 and the other one is $400.
Yeah. And the $400 one plays games better.
Yeah. And so
I will say though, in retrospect, Microsoft was just a little bit ahead of the game as far as, you know, these Amazon Echo and Google Home type devices. Like that's what Kinect really was. Mm-hmm. They just didn't use it that way.
Well, it was one aspect of Kinect, right?
It was the one aspect I used. I used that aspect quite a bit, but this is Microsoft's problem, or at least old Microsoft, like pre Satya Nadella, was just like, you're too early, guys. Like we can't do this right now. Web TV, a whole bunch of shit. Just not right, not quite ready for it. And even the I think the original Xbox was like one of those, or at least like that was kind of a failure, but it at least built into something. Yeah,
it was broadband only. It was they did not support 56k modems in the first Xbox, and it was scandalous because like you're excluding such a huge portion of America that doesn't have broadband broadband access. And it was like, we only support of fast internet speeds at that time, which was not very fast. Mm-hmm. But ultimately that worked out in their favor, because by the middle of the first Xbox's life, everybody sort of was transitioning there, and it really you know, buy Xbox 360, they owned that generation. Yeah. Because they were early to the multiplayer revolution of, you know, playing on the internet. Right.
So the point I was making was just like the last generation of consoles was a little weird. At least from the
really
Xbox
weird,
side.
Really slow. Yeah.
And really slow. And that's the thing is when I fired up Miles Morales on PS5 and you fire up that amazing evocative launch screen, you press X to start the game. And then 12 seconds later, the game begins. Like you're in the world. You can start jumping around. It's an incredible feeling. And also, it made me reflect on how much time in my life I've spent wasting, I've wasted of my life just looking at loading screens.
Yeah. Red Dead Redemption 2 used to take like 90 seconds to load on the Xbox One X.
Just the idea of playing a game and you can like press a button and bloop, you're there. Like it's not negligible load times, but it's negligible.
Miles Morales is a crazy thing where you're just like in, like there's one of the early scenes, right? You're in his apartment and you just hit a button and boom, you're out in New York. And you're just swinging around.
Yeah.
It's just if you use the fast travel, it literally like fades to black and fades up. Whereas the PlayStation 4 version, which I also played, you know, you have these scenes where he's like standing on the subway and hanging, holding on. And those are cute.
I kind of want to see some of those, but
They're super cute, but they're evidently unnecessary at this point. It's kind of rad.
Yeah. When I fast travel, the fast traveling around the map, it takes 5 seconds.
The whole opening sequence of Miles Morales, by the way, is just like, look at what we could do. It's such a flex because it's just like, you know, it starts in ray tracing mode. That's the quality mode. And I actually turned that off because I think the 60 FPS mode just plays better. It feels better to play. But that whole sequence where you're at one point, you know, you're on Rhino, he jumps into a mall and you're in the middle of a fully rendered mall running through it. And then he jumps out of the mall and you're back in the city. And it's like, it's seamless. It's so big. The world is so fully realized. Like, this is something we've never seen before. And it would have been impossible on either previous system.
Yeah. So I really am enjoying it. But I think what's so fascinating to me is how different the philosophies of these two different companies are right now, right? Because you have PlayStation, which was wildly successful with PlayStation 4. I think they sold over 100 million units of PlayStation 4, right? So they completely bested Xbox. I don't know if sales figures
are
public, but
under 50 million.
Yeah, it's like roughly half. They sold, PlayStation sold roughly double what Xbox sold, which is just like a pretty big accomplishment. And
the Nintendo Switch, by the way, which came out years after the Xbox One, it's like in between. It's like 75 million. So
also outsold the Xbox One. Yeah. So, but what's interesting to me is that PlayStation has responded to that by basically saying, hey, the thing that we just did, we're just going to do that, but more of that. Like the controller for the PlayStation is awesome. The DualSense, like the haptic feedback and stuff, it's like the responsive triggers. It's amazing. It's amazing.
They feel good.
There's a speaker in the controller now that like can make noises. There's a microphone in the controller. The console is massive in terms of its size. It's just like, hey, everything that we did last generation, we're just going to do that, but more. Right?
I don't feel like the size is like a good aspect. Like I have concerns about the design of that whole thing. But hey, they're delivering, you know, fast games, and that's really what people care about.
Yeah, and Xbox is like, hey, the controller is the same. Not only is the controller the same, but there's basically no exclusives, right? And their whole, seemingly the long game is getting you hooked on Xbox Game Pass, which is their version of Netflix, right? And if successful, would be like a very, very exciting new business model for video games. And I actually I'm really excited about Xbox Game Pass. I actually hope to one day work for Xbox Game Pass again, like to go back to Microsoft and like potentially, because they're like, I think they are writing the future of what video games
they are. They are. I think like Game Pass has been the best deal in gaming for years.
Oh,
like
by far.
I spend most of my time when I'm playing console games, I'm on, you know, I'm on Xbox, But I also do a lot of PC gaming, and even though I have a huge Steam library, like there's some good stuff. Gears Tactics was exclusive to PC, you know, and that came just within part of Game Pass. But I think like the ultimate deal, by the way, is just the freaking all access thing, right? Where it's like $25 a month, you get the Xbox Series S, and
you know, get the hardware everything. As well, yeah. Right?
Or $35 right. for the Xbox Series X, and I'm sure that'll be even more tempting once our hardware is back in stock. But that deal. Spending that just that chunk of money, so you're not spending $500 up front. I think it's really smart. To me, that is the whole feature: the services plus the subscription. Yeah,
but yeah, like PlayStation is really like doubling down on like we have like these amazing exclusives. Mm-hmm. They're proven. They've all sold tens of millions of copies, and we're just going to keep making those. And Xbox is like, hey, guess what? Doesn't even matter which console you're using. You can be using it on a PC. You can be using an 8-year-old piece of hardware. Doesn't matter, like it's all gonna play. It might not play very well,
or your phone,
but yeah, or your phone. Yeah.
And yeah, they're happy to, you know, with Project X Cloud and everything, they're happy you using Game Pass on any device. You know, I would be surprised if we don't see a future version of that, even like perhaps on a Sony device or more likely on a Switch, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's kind of been fascinating to see, like. It's not just like, oh, hey, these are two consoles like, that are really, really similar. I mean, they're similar in some ways in the sense that like their power is roughly the
they're
same.
They're basically like, exactly the same hardware-wise. But like, they're like both running AMD processors.
Same company, yeah.
Yeah, the same AMD GPU. Like, it's the same. They're both doing the same super fast SSD stuff, just a little differently. They have different names for that tech. But the hardware underneath, like, These machines are so close to being similar. It's really the trappings around them that
makes
them
the trappings
really
around them, the philosophy animating the companies, the approach to software is all quite different. And so I just think that's kind of fascinating to observe and exciting to see how it plays out. So, but okay, going back to Miles Morales, I think one of the things that's kind of unfortunate about this new situation is. Like ray tracing, obviously a big thing. For those who don't know what ray tracing is, short version is it basically like makes it so that the reflections, you know, and how light works in the games looks more realistic.
Yep.
And in Spider-Man Miles Morales, there is a ray tracing mode, or it's a fidelity. It's called fidelity mode, or you can choose performance mode, which gives up the ray tracing, but it runs at 60 frames per second.
Yep.
And I have to say, I was really excited about ray tracing. Then I saw the game running at 60 frames per second, and I was like, I can't. Like, it's literally, I never thought I would care about this.
You can't
go back. With you guys. Never thought I'd care about this. Like, who cares if it's 60 frames per second? I'm fine with, like, 25, 30 frames per second. I mean, movies are 24 frames per second. So, like, I'm never going to need more than 24 frames per second.
You're not controlling a movie, right? You're not controlling the character and having them respond to buttons you press. And it turns out the more frames, the smoother everything looks and feels, and it turns out that's good for games.
It's literally like HD to non-HD for me now. It's literally if it's not 60 frames per second,
get this out of my
eyes. It looks bad to me. But Jeff, I'm curious about you. Like, are you a fidelity guy or are you a performance guy when it comes to Spider-Man Miles Morales? Like, which would you rather choose, like the ray tracing or the 60 frames per second, or more than 60 frames per second?
I mean, I was a PC guy first, and my heart is always on the PC. So I like no compromises. Yeah. I want the rays traced and the frame rate high.
Listen, Jeff, this is console land, and it's all about compromise over here. But
yeah. I think we're going to get to a point where they're going to remove that option from the end user for a lot of these console games. Like, they're not going to. I think that is a cross-gen.
I see.
A feature that only exists because a lot of these games are cross-gen and they are just kind of bumping up is basically sliders. You know, they're adding things. These are additive experiences. You know, I played Miles Morales on PlayStation 4, and I'm here to tell you, if you can't get your hands on a PlayStation 5, it's still a great game that looks incredible. Like, yes, it looks phenomenal on a PlayStation 5, but there's no reason not to play that game this holiday season, even if you can't get a hold of a PlayStation 5 for whatever reason. Like, it's a phenomenal experience, even on PlayStation 4. But I think that as the generation firmly takes hold and these games are not made as cross-gen games, that they are just made as PlayStation 5 games, they will kind of remove that option from the end user and make the kind of experience that they want to make. Now, having said that, I'm a big fan of traced rays. I dig me some traced rays. I think it is dramatic and beautiful in a lot of games. If you haven't played the game Control with traced rays, by the way, the update for the new gen consoles for Control has been delayed, which is a bummer because that game could be a showcase on those new machines
that
as well.
That game basically killed the last systems. Like, that was the game where it was like, oh, we need new machines because this is embarrassing.
But I played it on PC with the ray tracing, you know, capability, and it's staggering. I mean, it really is a dramatic difference to have that true version of how light is behaving in a game world. And I think we're going to get there. But you're right. High frame rate is something that PC gamers have been talking about for a long time. And console gamers, basically, unless it's a racing game, nobody really cared, right? Nobody really talked about it. Everybody talked about
the
Gran Turismo.
We got some of it with the mid-gen system. So like the Xbox One X and the PS 4 Pro had that in some titles. And even some things like the Last of Us Remaster gave you a 60 FPS mode, which I don't think it really did the best with that. But, you know, it was a thing. But now it's like, it's everywhere and people have to learn the difference. And I have been basically just espousing, the gospel of the frames, because I do think as great as you can make your special effects, as great as your lighting can look, when you're actually playing the game, and especially something like Spider-Man, where you're zipping around the city and jumping all over the place and punching people and doing things, like, you want all that movement to look fast. I also did a bit of testing in Gears 5, by the way, which has a 120 FPS multiplayer mode, and I've been testing out a TV here that can run that, and that's a more subtle difference. But when you're like zoomed in, you know, with the sniper rifle, and every like little twitch of your thumb is immediately reflected on the screen, you're like, oh, I get it now. I think 60 is like the minimum you'd want, especially with this new hardware, at least.
I will just say that to me, right, I guess it's obvious, but like the difference between 30 and 60 is much bigger than the difference between non-traced rays and traced rays. Like, and because the magnitude of that difference is bigger, I got to go with the 60 FPS.
I don't know if you'll... I mean, I think based on Miles Morales, I tend to agree with you, but I think there's going to be uses and implementations for the trace rays that are going to be dramatic, and we're right at the beginning of how that's being used, and it's going to be an entire generation exploring that technology that's, I think, going to be jaw-dropping. I don't know if either of you have had a chance to play Demon's Souls on PlayStation 5 yet, but that game, by the way, defaults to the 60 frames mode. Like, you have to pull it out. And that's interesting, like, how developers, which mode they're defaulting to, right? But man, that game does feel to me like the first truly next-gen experience. Because as much as I love Miles Morales, and it is very, very beautiful on PlayStation 5, like I said, I played a lot of it on PlayStation 4 before the PlayStation 5 released, and it looks really good on PlayStation 4. But you turn on Demon's Souls, and you go, oh, this is where we're going. Like, this is the first taste of what is going to be in a year, in 2 years, on these new consoles. And I'm telling you guys, the games are going to start looking jaw drop. It's just a whole level of visual fidelity that we've never even touched before.
It's great. But, I mean, it's an exciting time. But it's also, it is the hard disks. Like, we brought this up too in the load times. It is just being rescued from those goddamn laptop hard drives that we were living with on the old consoles. Like, it was, you don't find those things in computers anymore. It's gross. Right.
The world has moved on to solid state now.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I think it's just like, as I was putting at the beginning, like, we didn't realize how much we were suffering under the weight of those spinning laptop speed drives.
Well, I feel like every PC gamer has been lording that over console gamers forever. But yeah.
We had a developer on, a former DICE developer on my podcast DLC a couple weeks ago. And he was talking about how, because the hard drive is so fast and they're able to pull data off the hard drive, what you're going to see are these open world games having a much denser environment than ever before, because they'll be able to pull stuff off. You know, currently in a game like Spider-Man, playing it on PlayStation 4 or whatever, or games like Assassin's Creed or whatever you want to do, playing it in the what is now last gen, you know, you want to have these big vistas and you want to be able to get on a horse and run fast through a world or swing on your webs fast through a world. So the game has to load a lot of its geometry into memory so that it can keep up with how fast you move through the world. Well, when you don't have to rely on stuff being in memory, when you can pull it off the hard drive just as fast as you can pull it from memory, you're able to actually make much more sophisticated objects, you know, mm-hmm. in a denser way. You'll be able to people that world with much more stuff because you don't have to worry about having a larger distances in memory at any given time because you can just pull it off the hard drive. So we're going to see, I think, not just visual fidelity improve, but actually how the game worlds are interactive and what stuff is in them get more sophisticated and more interesting too.
Mm-hmm. It's a very exciting time. You know, I'm actually like, I feel like the last generation was watching like Xbox, right? Specifically the Xbox side, like had these big dreams for what it was going to be. And then slowly, you know, like the leadership change of the company.
It was pretty quick. It was like within a couple of years. Yeah. They're like,
Within a couple of years, that stuff was basically all just unwound, right? And they spent the whole generation trying to like come back from those big dreams that they had to like, that were basically shattered.
And now a lot of their early marketing, by the way, was just like, hey, you've got this always online console. By the way, you're going to be paying extra fees for used games and it's going to check it every day. You know, we just need to know what's going on with your console. They never recovered from any of that. Yeah.
Well, I think the thing that was devastating was Don Matrick, head of Xbox at the time, who was like, what do you say to all the people like the service members, right? Like who are like overseas. They don't have access to internet and they can't, you know. They can't like check in their digital copies every day. And he's like, well, I think we have a great console for them. And that's the Xbox 360, which is the previous one. And that was a terrible answer. And he got rightly raked over the coals for that. And shortly thereafter left the company. So basically like if last generation was like, hey, they had all these they have all these big dreams in the big city. And all those dreams slowly died as you describe it, Devendra, quickly died. This generation is like, we are extremely confident about what we want to accomplish. It's like,
I want to play games.
Where the future of gaming is. We see like what we need to deliver that. And, not only that, they are writing the future of how games are going to be transacted. Mm-hmm. And so,
and acquiring other companies that will give them an edge as well. I mean, Microsoft has been very aggressive.
They are playing to win. Like it is very clear to me watching them that, you know, some in the past, Microsoft hasn't always played to win, right? Sometimes they'll dip their toe in and be like, hey, let's try out wristbands. Maybe we could make like a
wearables
wristband.
Were a thing for a while.
Right, wearables were a thing. And it's like, they didn't play to win. And it's like, this time I feel like they're playing to win. You know what I mean?
For sure.
You guys get the sense? Jeff, what do you think? You think they're playing to win?
I don't know if I'd put it that way, but I do feel like they are certainly more confident in what their vision of what they're creating is. I actually get the sense that they are not as adversarial with Sony. There's, you know, they've congratulated Sony on launches where that kind of was taboo before, and they seem to be encouraging. I think at least the official word for Microsoft seems to be, hey, there's room for everybody in this space, and we don't look at them as a competitor. We look at them as, you know, another player in this space, and we're doing something a little bit different. And I think you're right on about them saying, hey, you know, we don't need to sell you our $500 box for you to enjoy the content we're creating. And I think that's smart. And I think that that does lead to less, you know, bloodlust perhaps. And it's more about, hey, if we got a bunch of people giving us $10 a month to play hundreds of games, we're winning here. So
customers for life, you know.
Sorry, I'm not. Maybe I'm using the wrong words because winning implies that they're defeating everyone else. So that's probably not the best term to use. But I guess they're like, they're in it to win it. That's what using win again. More like, but it's just more like they're taking it seriously. I agree.
They're not going anywhere, baby.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere. Thank you, Devendra.
I think they have a clearer sense of their goal now. Yeah. You know, I think that the goal is they've really lashed onto something which I think both. works for them, seemingly. I don't know. I'm outside looking in, but it seems to work for them, but also is super good for the consumer. Like, yeah. I feel so confident recommending to my listeners Game Pass. It is the easiest recommendation in the world to say, yeah, for $10 a month, you get all of this. That's absolutely
and
bonkers.
More coming down the line.
Yeah,
like,
confident that you're going to get these day and date releases from all these incredible developers. And, you know, that you can play it on PC if you want to. That confidence that there is this huge library that you're always going to find something interesting to play, that you're going to have the newest stuff. And they seem to be aggressive in adding partners to that. I mean, logging on now and seeing all the EA games part of Game Pass, it's incredible. It's like, wow. So I think you're right. I think Microsoft is doing really smart things. But you also, you know, I've gotten a number of tweets in the last week or so of people saying, hey,
you getting tweets, Jeff?
Yeah, of people saying, hey, which of these should I get? If I can only get one, which can I get? And I don't think it's an easy answer because of what we've been talking about, which is they're playing two different games, right? No pun intended. You have to follow up with a question of what do you want out of it, right? Also, are you price conscious? Are you do the Sony exclusives matter to you? Because if you're just looking for bang for your buck, go Xbox all the way. I mean, you can't beat it. You can't beat that $10 a month or what, like you were saying, $25 or $35 a month to actually get the hardware too. It's pretty incredible. But if you're, you know, if you want to play the Miles Moraleses of the world, if you're looking forward to the next God of War and the next
Horizon,
you know,
Zero Dawn, you know,
exactly,
like,
all of these really top tier first party games, it seems like Sony is the place to be for that. I mean, we're going to see more from Microsoft in the next 2 to 5 years with all of these acquisitions that they've lined up recently, and you know, Bethesda not the least of them. But there's a bunch of these developers that they've just brought on board, and you're going to see the fruits of that come online in the next 2 to 5 years, and we may be humming a different tune by that point. But right now, the first party exclusive stuff is squarely in the Sony category, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And we'll say, and the controller stuff too, like the DualSense stuff feels next level in the way that the Series X controller and the Series S controller is just like, it's another Xbox controller, except I've been playing with the Xbox Elite Pad for the past several years since that first one came out. And that is such a good controller. Just feels good in your hand. Everything about it, the weight of it is so good. I wasn't expecting them to recreate that for a next gen system, but I wanted something a little more. Because this one feels almost too cheap and
it's
not
a
much
very,
has changed.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of situation Xbox controller. But it's kind of, here's the thing. I've been thinking about this and it's like, I have no actual knowledge. Like I have no inside information of any kind. But I have to believe that someone at Xbox knew about PlayStation's plans for the controller.
Yeah.
Right. And they consciously decided not to do it. Right. That's what I have to believe. I can't believe that they were like caught by surprise that like, oh my gosh, PlayStation's innovating with the controller. So I don't know. I guess they maybe this is not the first time that PlayStation has tried to introduce controller innovations that went nowhere. Right. Like, remember
this feels different though.
PlayStation 3, the six axis.
Yeah. Which lost rumble because of that.
How many
whole
games had six axis that you played? You know, like, you're right. It's very possible this will be successful, but and certainly with Miles Morales already, it's already a great usage.
I mean, have you guys played Astro's Playroom much? Because that thing,
I have. Yeah.
It's good.
It's the best.
It's really good. Yeah. Really great demonstration.
But that's the question, is our third party is going to adopt the, the controller stuff? Because, you know, especially with Xbox not really offering that feasibility, do they invest development time into fine-tuning that stuff for only half of their potential audience? You don't know. Maybe it'll be the kind of thing where Microsoft is updating the controller halfway through the generation and saying, oh, we add this as well. But maybe also only first-party Sony games use that stuff, just like only first-party Sony games were using half the stuff on the DualShock, you know, the motion control in the DualShock, or even, you know, most developers were using that center pad as a button, as just a big ass button.
Map
you
button.
Know?
Yeah.
I barely knew it was more than a button. you know, right. For most of the generation. So we'll see. It certainly is very promising right now, but like, time will tell whether it. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's very exciting. There's a lot in the future that's unknown.
There's so much exciting. One big thing I want to get across here is, it is insane the level of hardware that is in these machines right now. If you were to build a gaming PC that could get you a similar amount of performance, you'd be spending at least $1,000. Like, yeah, the video and also, card alone is near $500. So yeah,
and also the size of these things is big, but it's still smaller than a gaming PC. Mm-hmm.
It's
right?
Still
like,
smaller than gaming PC.
than most gaming PCs. So in terms of value for money, I think you're saying, Devendra, it's really good. Both systems are really good value for money. But Jeff, what were you going to say?
I would say, and they're both from my experience, whisper quiet, which is wild, especially. Yeah. Knowing what we know about last generation, which, you know, both the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One were like, you know, it was not subtle.
Yeah. Yeah. They also came up with different solutions for the cooling. I will say, I think I'm most impressed with the Xbox Series X's cooling just because it is silent even when it's under load. Whereas the PlayStation 5, I can hear a whining, you know, I know it's on. The Xbox, I can't even tell it's on if it's doing, like, if it's actually doing a bunch of game stuff. So there is a difference, but they're both pretty quiet, especially compared to PCs and the last consoles, for sure.
So I want to close by talking about TVs. Okay. Yeah. A couple years ago, I went all in on the LG OLED system and bought two LG C8s, right?
You bought two?
Yeah, one for my living room and like a smaller one for my like little studio area here.
Okay.
And okay. So, you know, that's not a brag. That's actually like me saying why this is my downfall, because basically
we were talking about this, Dave. I thought this was just you settling on one TV. But okay.
Well, I did all this research. I'm like, the C8 is great, and then the C9 at the time was out, and it's like, "Oh, well, it has this thing called HDMI 2.1, which allows for like higher frame rates." I'm like, I am never going to care about that. Like, there's no way I'm ever going to give a crap about that. Now it turns out basically you need HDMI 2.1 in order to experience like high frame rates and all their glory for these new systems.
Well, it's beyond that's 4K beyond 60 FPS. That is what you're getting with HDMI 2.1. I don't think that's going to be a huge deal for many people, right? Like, even, I don't know what Gears 5 is running in the multiplayer, but a lot of games, if they're running in a high frame rate mode, because Dirt 5 also does that, it is running at a lower resolution. So it's running at like 1440p or even 1080p with some games. And then, like, you don't need, well, you still need HDMI 2.1 in some cases, but I have a TCL 8 series TV, which I just bought this year. It does not have HDMI 2.1. But it does support 120 hertz.
Mm.
And there are some TVs like that. Yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to get across in this whole thing is like, I've basically done a complete 180 on, I mean, I think it's, you know, I've watched a bunch of like Linus Tech Tips videos, and basically he's like, it is a very convincing argument that when it comes to some types of content, specifically gaming, the hertz, right, the like getting 120 hertz or 144 hertz is more important than having higher resolution. Like, it for many people, it is going to provide a better experience, or even not even hertz, like not even resolution, but like frame rate,
like, just consistent arguably, frame rate.
Yeah. Arguably, having like a higher refresh rate on your monitor is more important than having like a high frame rate running game.
Well, there's also VRR, which is variable refresh rate on TVs, which is a super new feature that I didn't think I gave a shit about. And yet I turn on Assassin's Creed Valhalla on my sweet new Xbox Series X, and it's got screen tearing because I don't have VRR on my TV. Mm. And I'm like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so basically mistakes were made, I think is what we're saying, right? Mistakes were made.
Well, you could never...
On every level, like across the industry, like across, like, it's not just us. It's just like there were not many great choices. The TV industry does a bad job of rallying around these standards and kind of getting them all at the same time. That's one of the reasons why the PS4 and the Xbox One just launched at the wrong time, right? It was before everybody was going 4K. It was before HDR was even a thing. So that's why the mid-gen consoles had to come out. So, you know, I feel like at least we're in a spot where, okay, HDMI 2.1 is starting there aren't going to be many major, you know, video format changes. 8K is coming down the line, but not going to be a big deal for gaming. So we're safe. You're safe right now to invest in one of these consoles.
My lesson is, you can never win. You can never win. Technology will always destroy you. You can never win,
except 8K is not that great. It's okay, folks. I'll be talking about this for a while because I am the guy that everybody's trying to market everything to. And they're like, oh, people, they have all 4K TVs now. They need something new to spend $5,000 on. Here, look at 8K, even though there's no content. And it would be insane to render games at that resolution. Sure, why not?
Do you guys ever watch that show Baskets?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This show Baskets where he like buys a 4K TV, but he has no content to watch on it. So he ends up watching the demo disc from the store that's like just 4K scenes from nature on repeat.
We've all been there. Yeah.
We've all been there. So, but Jeff, you're like probably this impacts you more than any of us because you like video games is a lot of what you do for a living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you, it sounds like you're psyched. Yeah. You're psyched for what's ahead. Yeah.
Oh, I think this is a phenomenal, very, very promising generational mm-hmm. switch over. And
I'm trying to think back to like the last generation, like, did we feel the same way? You know, like,
I guess
I don't remember feeling this excited and optimistic at the end, like when Xbox One and PS4 launched, you know what I mean?
It wasn't that huge. Yeah.
I mean, I always get excited about the new consoles, but I feel like this time, It the industry is a little more mature and understanding what it's headed towards. And I think right at this moment, it may even feel we may have a false sense of what's in store for us. Overcorrecting on the negative side, right? We don't realize how great these systems are going to be because the software isn't there yet.
Yeah,
and right now we're in this weird cross generation place where even as impressive as games like Miles Morales are, it's a PlayStation 4 game. Like it was developed on the PlayStation 4 and then they added some stuff for PlayStation 5, right? These are, you look at something like Last of Us Part 2, that game is jaw-dropping on PlayStation 4 hardware. Yep. But when we, mm-hmm. but think back to the games that launched the last generation and how far we came to get to Last of Us Part 2, right? To think about how PlayStation 4 generation started and then we arrived at Last of Us Part 2 to finish that generation, that's as far as this generation is going to progress. And I think we're going to see stuff even in the next 2 years that's going to make all of the stuff that we're playing today on these boxes seem primitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so PlayStation 4 launch titles, you're talking about games like Angry Birds Star Wars,
yes, of
Assassin's,
course I am.
Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, Battlefield 4, Call of Duty Ghosts, the first one, and Knack, plus Need for Speed Rivals. Those were part of the games that made up the PlayStation 4 launch slate.
Yeah.
Now, I think Miles Morales is actually better than all of those, but I agree with what you're saying. Mm-hmm. We have now experienced but a taste of what is to come.
Yeah.
And it's very exciting.
It's very exciting. I mean, you can now plan your next TV purchase around this. I honestly think I'm looking more closely at like short throw projectors, which are coming down in price and are pretty phenomenal. Like for $2,000, you can get a nice 4K, you know, projector that sits right in front of your wall and spits out a 120-inch image. And I feel like that's going to be a more and more enticing thing, especially as who knows when we're going back to theaters, right? So to me, that's the next thing. I mean, TVs are getting bigger and cheaper too. So that's always going to be the easiest ways. But man, it's very exciting. I like media. I like video games. I like all this stuff. So it's all converging at the same time.
Well, I'd recommend you check out Devinger's reviews of the hardware. Very good stuff. And also, obviously, listen to Jeff's podcast, DLC, which I enjoy quite often, and it has really good talk about video games. So I hope you've enjoyed this little crossover between all three of our worlds on this After Dark. Thanks for listening, and if you ever want to hear us talk about this topic again, let us know about it at patreon.com/filmpodcast.
Thanks for supporting us.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for supporting us, and we hope you enjoyed the conversation. Talk soon.